Welcome to the Back Porch Education Podcast. Today with Steve, we will discuss the importance of place in homeschooling. Get your education. Back Porch Education. All right, Steve, how goes it?
It goes well. My guess is that it's going to go around a corner when you read a poem.
You got it. But hey, I've got one for you that you're always talking to me about, Wendell Berry. So I thought I'd throw a little Berry back at you.
Well, I'll reserve any negative comments for the reader rather than the writer. You better read it well.
Yeah. Well enough. Farming well or pretty well, but that's Frost. Reading well or pretty well. Okay, so we're talking about place. You know, having your own spot. And when it comes to place, this is one of the poems that leaps to mind. It is entitled, How to Be a Poet. How to Be a Poet by Wendell Berry. To remind myself. One, make a place to sit down. Sit down. Be quiet. You must depend upon affection, reading, knowledge, skill, more of each than you have, inspiration, work, growing older, patience. For patience joins time to eternity. Any readers who like your poems doubt their judgment. Two, breathe with unconditional breath, the unconditioned air. Shun electric wire. Communicate slowly. Live a three-dimensioned life. Stay away from screens. Stay away from anything that obscures the place it is in. There are no unsacred places. There are only sacred places and desecrated places. Three, accept what comes from silence. Make the best you can of it. Of the little words that come out of the silence, like prayers prayed back to the one who prays, make a poem that does not disturb the silence from which it came.
Not bad. I think he would be bothered that you were reading it from a screen.
Well, yeah, there's that.
But he brings up these things that are necessary for writing poetry, and I think we're going to argue for anything resembling education, learning, contemplation, thought. Obviously, as he winds it up, but I think it's woven throughout the poem, is this notion of silence.
Yeah.
But he starts with the word that he, you know, has said should be a part of the curriculum in colleges, affection. And I think okay. that's pulling off of one of our buddies, Buck Holler, who's been on this podcast before, loves to read to us Samuel Coleridge's notion that education begins in first finding the love of the thing and then bringing about the discipline necessary to understand it. So this notion of affection, I think, is proper.
Yeah.
But I feel like I've just rambled all off away from our main point, which is place. What is it? What is it? Especially, I think we're thinking here. I certainly think this can roll into the classroom.
Yeah, sure.
But I think you and I kind of talked in up front that as many of our listeners are homeschooling folks, this is a special consideration for the homeschool parent. What are my preparations, expectations, requirements of my students when it comes to where they learn. That's really the
absolutely
kind of the key.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, all these questions. You're right that classroom. When I say learning place, the Western world says classroom.
Yes.
Right. I mean, right. And
to the point where there are homeschoolers that I don't. I'm not saying this is bad, but they have taken that as literally as possible and have a classroom in their home.
Right.
Perhaps with even traditional desks
sure.
and a whiteboard and maybe a flag on the wall. Yeah. You know, it looks like a classroom.
Yeah, right.
And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with that.
Mm-hmm. You could probably do without the tile floors.
Yeah, yes. Right? Yeah, I mean, there's like certain aspects of the highly chemical smell and that sort of thing. From right. Better paint job.
Maybe. Yeah.
Maybe a few more windows
yeah,
right. would be good. A little more control over the temperature and that sort
right.
of thing.
No, but okay. But seriously, though, I like this poem for a lot of reasons. And I think it has a lot to do with what we're talking about today because, I guess I proposed this topic because all those questions that people ask about curriculum, what should it be? How long should it be? How difficult? How graded? Mm-hmm. How much? How little? How soon? How late? All these, where from? Those are good questions.
Right.
And all I'm saying is the attention that you pay to curricular decisions, it might be worth spending that kind of time thinking about the place where the child is learning, just like the medium or the, you know, whatever, the curriculum.
Right. And it's an interesting argument because Barry says, find a place to sit down.
Yeah.
Sit down.
Exactly.
Shut up.
Be quiet. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
And I don't think that Socrates would argue with him. But Socrates chose an almost entirely different means, the peripatetic, right, where he felt that a conversation worked best walking down a road.
Walking, right.
And that there is the great outdoors, for instance, you know. Charlotte Mason was a big proponent of the place being, and I even see that in the poem.
Sure.
Make it a place that obscures the place as little as possible.
Exactly.
I almost see at least a window.
Right. Well, shun electric wire.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Breathe, whatever he says, breathe with unconditional breath. Unconditioned air.
Yes.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. So Barry's no stranger to the outdoors.
Right.
And I think that to the extent that we can join him in that endeavor, so much the better for us.
Mm-hmm.
Let me push back on Socrates a little bit. You said Socrates thought walking down the road was the best, and that's true. You're right. However, when Socrates, one of the things that Socrates is famous for is when he was walking in the agora and
stopped.
All of a sudden stopped.
Yes.
Right? And so that's going to be, I'm going to bring that up and say that is Socrates taking Barry's advice. Find a place to sit down. Sit down.
Hmm.
Be quiet. Okay, I know he didn't sit down, but he did stand stock still, it is said, for a day or so.
Right.
Right?
To the point where people were concerned.
Right. And perhaps that was not unwarranted, but it all worked out in the end. So.
Right. No, and I think the greatest teacher, right, Christ, did teach from a seated position as the Jewish right. rabbi was wont to do.
Right.
I remind my students from time to time that it was the teacher that was seated. The students stood around and listened. I don't make them do that all the time.
Right. Only when they, yeah.
If the attention wanes, it's amazing how an upright position wakens the mind. But in particular, one that I know you and I have talked about, I think on the podcast before, repetition here would only aid learning, is that of the meal, right?
Yeah. Oh, come on.
A lot of teaching, learning mm-hmm. goes on as the soul is fed, as the body is mm-hmm. fed. Does that mean that you teach a homeschool through the medium of food? Well, if you have teenagers.
No. Yeah. Well, it's good.
I think the purposefulness that you're talking about, mm-hmm. that if you're going to put all this time and effort and energy and concern, anxiety almost, into the inner workings of what I teach.
Right. Which you should. Right. Except anxiety. Don't put that into it. But everything else.
We put a lot of energy into that.
No doubt.
Consideration of the ambience, mm-hmm. the atmosphere, the place of learning is legit. And of course, I'm coming from a liturgical place. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's not just that my pastor preaches a good sermon. Mm-hmm. I need to know when to stand, when to kneel, mm-hmm. when to go forward, how to behave. Mm-hmm. And I know that those things shape me in a different but very important way mm-hmm. than the words.
Yeah.
Right. That's why often in many circles you hear the twin constructs of word and sacrament. Mm-hmm. That the word of God and God are shaping me.
Yes.
And that my activity in a worship service, what's going on, where is it, what's the setting like,
right.
what's on the walls, if anything, mm-hmm. the music, etc. All of this is combined
right.
to have a total effect on me. Mm-hmm. So as important as the right textbook would be, so that right place
yes.
that brings the student to the right place,
yep.
which I think is what the poem is about.
Absolutely.
Because it gets down to the end, it's about those few words
yeah.
that are given out of that silence,
right.
that receptivity.
Right. I don't think that Barry's being coy.
No.
Right. I don't think that he's being funny. I think that Barry believes that being a poet is one of the highest ends of man. Mm-hmm. And that he is serious. This is his real, actual advice for how to do it. And so I think it's pretty good advice for us as we're attempting to construct a place of learning mm-hmm. for our students, for our children, whether that be the homeschool setting or you know, otherwise.
So what's that place look like?
Oh, well, you're right to push us to what does it actually look like? Because I think that we've philosophically...
Did I say what does it look like?
I think
probably
so.
Did.
I think so.
I think I'm in a bigger question. What is that place like?
What is it like? Yeah.
I mean, appearance is
sure.
part of it. But
sure.
I think there's... What are the criteria mm-hmm. that we could discuss for our listeners mm-hmm. that bring out sort of the essentials of a place of learning?
Mm-hmm.
There. That's a better question
yeah.
than the first one.
Right. It is. That's a lot. That's a great question.
Maybe I tweak it by asking what brings this silence. If Barry says that's the thing,
mm-hmm.
what works toward or against that? He mentioned screens.
I know
sure. our listeners are
sure.
going to want to...
Right. That's good. Electric wire isn't mm-hmm. all that helpful, right? Shun electric wire. I don't know that I'm going to take Barry's suggestions as prescriptions,
mm-hmm.
But if I'm going to go against him, I better have a darn good reason for doing so.
Yeah.
So the first thing I'm going to notice about his suggestions, rather than saying something specific, is to generalize and say that I don't think his suggestions are predicated on what makes us comfortable at the moment.
Right.
Right. So it's not find a comfy chair because...
It's tough for me to envision lay down on your bed and write good poetry.
Right. Right, exactly.
And I have many students that feel like that's the place of learning. Even in my traditional classroom, they're trying to learn at home, quote-unquote homework, mm-hmm. and they're finding it difficult, I think, in part, just because of position.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but when I'm supine,
yeah. I'm sure I'm asleep,
bruising my nose right. with the heavy book that, right. that falls on my face when
exactly.
I
exactly
yes
so, exactly
and I like learning.
Yeah,
right. Those who may not like it as much probably should be helped to ooh. As fruitful a position.
Right. Well, this is education, though. Like, this is the whole deal. Is like. Your child is not going to just naturally find mm-hmm. aha, this aha sort of amazing eureka space and place and position and curriculum and all. Like, you ought to be intentional about these right. things, right? And so...
And you brought up comfort, and that's an interesting thing because...
Well,
I don't think discomfort...
No.
Being uncomfortable, mm-hmm. right? I think this is an Aristotelian type thing. There's a middle road here.
Yeah.
Where I'm comfortable enough to not be thought. I think the best place for learning is when you're no longer aware of the place.
Mm.
Right? Mm. So I had this experience okay. early on in teaching, sharing a little hallway with a kindergarten class. I taught middle school.
Okay.
So in and of itself.
Right.
Just the differences in what we did was... But she was forever fussing about how many of her students had attention problems.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, every year we went off to a teacher convention, and all these vendors would just rub their hands when they saw this lady coming.
Right.
Because she was coming with big guns to buy.
Bought it all.
She bought stuff. She had so much stuff on her walls.
Yeah, oh boy.
That in some cases they overlapped. Or she was just, I don't like this one so much anymore. I put something right over the top. Literally, sometimes it was two or three pieces. And at some point she realized she could poke holes in them.
Oh.
And put strings and hang them from her false ceiling. So there were like these posters.
Ugh.
It was a mobile.
Right.
I'm not mentioning names or anything. So I'm not even told you where in the world this was.
Right.
But I remember thinking to myself, attention problems. That poor little five-year-old is sitting in a room going, hey, what are you doing?
Right.
Looking around, right. trying to see
it's a
everything.
Stimulus issue.
Right. The right. place was getting in the way.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
The place was more fascinating than the teacher-student
right.
conversation that should have been going on.
Right.
So I'm not saying bare walls.
That is my...
Right, well...
See, that's pretty much the way I go.
If it's on my wall, it's intentional.
Absolutely.
There's a reason for it there.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, practical.
Yeah.
I got a few charts and things that...
Sure.
...that are, it's just easier to reference. If I'm teaching history, I've got a map up on the wall because I use it all the time.
Of course.
But then there is artwork.
Mm-hmm.
For years now, I've had Van Gogh's sunflowers on the wall.
Beautiful.
It is. And I'm from Kansas, so when kids, they think that's why it's on my wall.
Okay.
And I love to ask...
Hey, that's not a bad...
No, but I love connection. To ask the question, why else would it be up there?
Uh-huh.
And after a while, they realize that there are other reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And they think themselves quite clever to come up with them.
Great.
And I consider them quite clever to have given it some thought.
Yeah.
Right? So instead of distraction,
mm-hmm.
it becomes an addition.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, good. So that is worth hanging our hats on. Not distractional, but additional.
Yeah.
Right? Synergistic.
And his poem is talking about...
Right.
You want to get to a place where you can hear what is,
mm-hmm.
not be drawn away
mm-hmm.
either by life's stuff
right.
or the surroundings that are more interesting than the thing being considered. There's a point, right? In any good moment of learning...
Mm-hmm.
You and I often refer to it in Greek as the logos, mm-hmm. right? There's this unifying thing, this idea that we're pursuing, and the place should make it possible to pursue it,
right?
Not more difficult to keep my mind on it. And in particular, I think that that explains, not again, I don't think I'm going to remove the screen. I can't because of where I teach.
Yeah, right.
But I recognize that the screen offers this single dimension or two dimension.
Yeah.
Rather than three dimension, as he's talking about, the high risk of equating that screen with what they do with a screen when we're not learning.
Entertainment.
And bringing the expectation, if I'm looking at a screen, it should be doing this to me.
Right.
And I'm going to resist it if it tries to teach me something.
Okay, wow, good. You're kind of spilling over into a conversation that we want to have in the future about that sort of thing, right? Screen usage. So much the better. I think that's right. I want to go back to what you were saying about liturgy. There are denominations, right? There are Christians who would say that, the cathedrals, the high ceilings, the gold, the artwork, none of that has any bearing on my spirituality or whatever. That my spirituality isn't subject to, or my faithfulness or worshipful attitude or worship is not dependent on place. But I don't know that I can go with them that far.
I think they're probably unconsciously dabbling a little bit in a very common view that seeks to divorce the spirit and the body.
Yeah.
Because I would say that if it's 85 degrees in their service, whether it's liturgical or not, they're noticing it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's affecting their ability.
Sure.
Or vice versa, if it's 55 degrees.
They're right.
Like, oh, so we got to set one of these pews on fire so they're about to die. Right. And that's just temperature.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say that there's a place that if you get it, it works for everyone. In fact, this is probably a warning I would give to people who are able to individuate, like homeschoolers, that Billy, your 5-year-old, may be needing a different place. Well, certainly in a home, each of the 2, 3, 4, 5 students that you've got need their own place.
Yeah.
I know folks who are capable of studying around a table.
Okay.
All right. And I'm not saying that that's bad.
No.
But they probably have a seating arrangement based upon proximity to the instructor. Right. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Some need to sit close to teacher and some can sit farther away. Some need to be seated at the table when learning's occurring. Others are only there part of the time and are learning somewhere else. In which case, maybe there's more than one place of learning. Maybe there's a place of instruction and a place of reading and writing and personal contemplation. And I have no problems with that.
No,
students probably have two places of learning.
Well, we would, hope so.
When interactive with a teacher.
Right. We act like they do anyway because we assign homework.
Homework. Exactly. That's exactly where I'm going with this.
Right.
To use your, come back to the liturgical discussion, that whether the pews are patterned or not affects things.
Yeah.
If you kneel, as we do in my denomination, and you don't have kneelers.
Yeah, you know, sure.
Or if the priest has decided that today would be a wonderful day for outdoor mass, and there's no kneelers, and it's wet grass, and suddenly this is affecting you, or as recently occurred during the liturgical season of Advent, the Advent candles burn too low and catch the little wreath on fire.
Oh, no.
Right? So why are those candles there? I'm happy to have a conversation about to candle or not to candle.
Sure.
But what I'm saying is even in the least formally liturgical.
Mm-hmm.
And I say formally liturgical because I don't think there's an a-liturgical church in the world.
Okay.
I've
write
been
it down.
To,
that's
to,
absolutely.
To some of the most spirit-led services in the world.
Yeah.
And they still know what to do when the Spirit leads them in a particular direction.
Right, absolutely.
And if you attend on a regular basis, he tends to lead them through the same sorts of things. So so whether it's printed out in a prayer book as I deal with.
Or just caught.
Or just caught.
Yeah.
There are things happening and they tend to happen regularly in a certain way.
Right.
That defines them as the kind of worship that they have.
Right.
And I'm not making any judgments.
Absolutely not.
Other than the judgment that it matters.
Right. Well, it's helpful.
Right.
This is how, like, knowing what to do
if
makes
in,
it easy to do what you should do.
If you're in denomination A,
yeah,
and you go visit denomination Q,
right,
you feel out of place. You're looking around. What's going on? What should I be doing? Everybody
mm-hmm.
else is standing up. I'm going to stand up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, everybody else saying the Lord's Prayer. I'm going to. We don't do this at my church, but okay.
Right.
You know, and so and. That's part of what makes us, I think, so unconscious of the fact that while certainly we're tuned in every Sunday or every class period to what's the preacher or what's the teacher have to say today, what's the content,
mm-hmm.
the preparation made in advance for my physical experience, either in that classroom or that sanctuary,
mm-hmm.
matters.
Right.
It might be completely lost on the participant, mostly because of familiarity.
Right.
We've been here Sunday after Sunday, or in particular with a student. This is just Mr. Elliott's classroom, and it
yeah.
looks like crap.
Right.
You know, you know, there's all these books.
Right.
Hasn't he heard that there's a there's a technological revolution going on? You know, they're fascinated because they assume that if it's in my room as a book, I've read it.
Right.
It's a great fiction to just keep going. Of course I've read the entire
oh, yeah.
Encyclopedia Britannica.
Right.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. Have you read it? What did you think?
Yeah.
Well, read it, then we'll talk about it, right?
If we have that serious conversation sometime where I tell the story, would I bought that?
Yeah.
The $1,200 investment that it was. And my new bride just about passed out. The promise was I'll read the whole thing.
Oh, boy.
And to this day, 25 years ago when I stopped reading it, I was somewhere in the E's.
Oh, man.
So you can do your own figuring on what volume that is.
Right.
In my retirement.
Yeah, you could have got it for about 200.
Well, in my retirement, to fulfill that promise, I pretty much have my reading laid out for me.
Oh,
it's
man.
Like, I'm going to read the Oxford English Dictionary.
Right. Ooh, I love OED.
Ooh.
It's good stuff. Well, okay, so not comfort. Comfort's not going to be the way that it's decided.
Well,
but
comfortable enough to be forgotten,
mm-hmm.
but uncomfortable enough to not put me to sleep.
Comfortable enough to be forgotten, but not comfortable.
I don't mind
to
if the chair is padded.
Yeah, no.
But it ought to be a chair, not a bed.
Right, absolutely. I don't know, dude. I hear you, but Dostoevsky says low ceilings are bad for the soul.
Well.
And he's either right or he's wrong or he's expressing a matter of taste that just simply has no truth value to it.
Mm.
And I don't think it's the third one.
Mm. No, I think we've established that the environment matters.
Yeah, yeah.
The place matters or we wouldn't be talking about it.
Right, that's right.
Here these many minutes.
Right.
But I'm not willing to say that there is a place that's right for everyone.
Okay, that's true.
And I think that that's part of the fun of teaching in a traditional classroom. The challenge
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
is finding a happy medium.
Mm-hmm.
For the homeschooler, the fun is the fact that I can actually work at this, as you've said,
right.
purposefully pursue this
right.
so that I know I've come as close as possible to and it might change, mm-hmm. right? From 5 to 15,
good.
You might find that the place changes. But the recognition, the thoughtful notion, first find a place to sit down,
mm-hmm.
then sit down.
Right.
Right. The purposefulness of that, I think, is the best, in some regards, the best regard of that whole poem is that not just whatever happens.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Don't give it no thought.
Right, right. Well, like he says, and this is where I would go with this poem, there are no unsacred places.
Yes.
There are only sacred places and desecrated places. Right?
You want to say desacredized.
Right, exactly.
Because we don't realize that desecrated.
Desecrated is
it's coming from
sacra. Yeah, exactly.
Hey.
Heyo. I think he's right. The place ought to be oriented toward what you're trying to do. I mean, no one would suggest that you try to split a cord of wood with a tiny camping hatchet.
Right.
You get the right tool for the job.
Place is a part of that.
Right, exactly. A different man will use a different sized hatchet or what have you, axe. But it must fit. There's a fittedness. Yeah. And
Dostoevsky would say that the low ceiling really inhibits the axe man.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's going to put that axe right through the roof if you're not good. So,
right.
Just to bring that all around.
That's right. Moment. Well, okay, I want to go back to one thing that you said because I think that it's worth contemplating. There may be, or worth restating. I do know some homeschool parents who, when their first child reaches the age of 5, they decide this will be the way that all of my children are homeschooled. This is the curriculum.
Sure.
And we will never stray from it.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't.
Right.
And that works. I know a lot more who say something similar to that. And then by the time that first child reaches 7 or 8, or by the time the second child reaches 5, they're already pulling this and adding this and, you know, add and subtract and move all kinds of stuff around.
And you're referring to the place,
the curriculum.
Curriculum.
They do that with the curriculum, but what you were saying earlier about the place can change as the student ages,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
or whatever. Like I want to just sort of underscore that the care or the willingness that you have to change the curriculum. You ought to be thinking about the place that the student is working to. So put the desk in their room. This isn't working. Okay, then move the desk. This isn't working. Okay, move the desk again. This isn't working. Okay, get rid of the desk.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right? Well, we do this
in
things that we really care about in the retail world.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? We change what's on the end cap. We redo the whole display. We try and come up with just the right colors and run. I mean, because
there aren't Halloween cookies
right
in April
right,
and when you first walk into the door
right
at Walmart,
as a retailer, you recognize this all matters.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That what's
layout
bought
mm-hmm.
is in part dependent upon the place.
Yeah.
And I just encourage a teacher, homeschool or in the classroom,
mm-hmm.
to give it that much thought as well. Not a plea for the world's greatest bulletin boards and art deco room and arts and crafts. And so I've had to figure out what fits my teaching to the student in terms of ambience and atmosphere and context.
Mm-hmm.
And every teacher, I think, has to go through that.
Yeah.
Some of it is practical. What things can I put around me?
Boy, I sure wish I had a...
Right.
Okay,
right.
Go get one.
If there was only a map of the United States up on the wall.
Right.
Oh, there is in the room that Jason and I are talking about.
Right.
Why would you want that? To make it look like a school? No.
No.
Because I'm needing it as reference.
Right, because right? They don't know where the Ohio River is.
I got so tired of telling my students why, for the most part, your average, I did what I was told to do kind of work gets a C.
Mm-hmm.
And how I think with A's and B's and C's and so on, that I wrote it out on a chart that's up on a wall. And when a kid starts fussing with me, here, I got it all written out for you.
Right.
Lest you think I'm making this stuff up as I go along, because I don't want to mess with your P for the B to become an A.
Right.
Right.
I did make it up as I went along, but I went along 20 years ago,
and
it's made up.
And it's gotten plenty of editorial over time.
Absolutely.
But it's there because it's a common occurrence,
mm-hmm.
right? I teach literature, and so the books that we read, there's lists up on the wall for the students to visually see. We're on the third book, and we've got five more after this. What's coming after this?
Great.
So on and so forth. And I tried to make it look attractive.
Sure.
You know, I didn't just...
Right.
Throw a handwritten thing up on a wall.
Right. 12-point Times New Roman.
I love to put quotes mm-hmm. either up on my whiteboard, or sometimes I'll print them off and put them up on my door or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because I don't want any mind to ever be at rest in my classroom.
Mm.
When I say that, I don't mean not at leisure.
Right. Good.
I don't want it turned off.
Right.
I want the mind contemplating a thing, and it needs material.
Absolutely.
And especially
fuel.
At the beginning and end of the class,
mm-hmm.
when maybe I'm not providing that directly through a lesson, but they have some time,
mm-hmm.
there's things that there's this
Survey.
Beautiful picture of sunflowers up on the wall for them to contemplate, so on. I would go so
man,
far
I'm learning
as to,
something right now. That's good.
There is the whole, we've mostly talked visually, we've talked about silence.
Yeah.
I don't even know that we've got time, given where we are in our recording, to go into the world of music or what is or isn't heard.
Mm-hmm.
The beauty of teaching outdoors is that it provides its own soundtrack.
Right.
And
rhythms.
And
yes,
it's fascinating to me that my students, I think it's been heightened in the time of COVID.
Okay.
Because masks, they want to get outside where maybe if we stay 6 feet apart, we can take our masks off.
Right.
But I've just always found students, if I take a class outside, especially a conversation outside,
yeah,
it's just more, should I use the word natural?
That's the first word that comes to mind for me. I've had the similar experience. Take them out. There's the blowing of the papers and the giggles because of, you know, we're sitting on the grass and, oh, look, my paper goes flying across the field.
And the dipstick lawnmower guy shows up.
Right. Invariably.
Hey, trying to have class here.
But there is a, it's not quietness, no. But it is a,
there's a
peace.
Yep. And there's a closeness to who we are, mm-hmm. or to, we've had a squirrel stupidly run into the middle of our circle, and then you know squirrels, they're the most indecisive creature God has ever made. And once he was in the middle, he must have turned and tried another direction about 8 times, which of course in particular had the female section of the circle all
in fits.
Headed for the hills, which gave him a gap to get out,
right.
You know.
Well,
but you know, there are those moments,
yeah.
That or the stupid crow that won't shut up,
yeah.
You know. Or
yeah.
You've ticked off some neighbor's dog, and he's not going to shut up till you acknowledge him or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But all of that is, I would maintain that while it distracts them too. nature and hopefully what it is that you're studying.
Yeah.
You know, if there's any connection to the real world, then this...
attract.
Yes.
Like add toward.
Yes.
Right? It's not a dist... It's not a pulling away.
It's not amusement.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Good. Well, we could perhaps carve out another thing or two, but I think that was good work.
I think we've completely missed Barry's few words. If he listened to this 40 minutes, he'd go, you were good after about five.
Right.
Right after the poem, you should have quit.
And you didn't read it particularly well either. All right, man. Well, as always, I enjoyed the conversation. Thanks.
Until next time.